2024 feels like it's going to be a big year. A national election that looks like a rematch, and a local election that looks like the end of an era. What are the issues and personalities that will dominate our headlines? Joining us today is Sacramento Bee California opinion editor Marcos Breton. Marcos, what one issue do you hope will get the focus it deserves in 2024?
Well, locally, I would say that it's not like homelessness doesn't get the attention it deserves, but I think in Sacramento, what the election's going to settle is whether elections will be decided locally because of homelessness, and more to the point, because of anger over homelessness. We have a district attorney who's suing the city of Sacramento, tapping into the anger that people feel, the frustration that they feel, seeing the desperation of homelessness in their faces daily. And we've moved beyond any kind of uniform empathy over the issue. We've reached the anger portion of our program. And that anger could very well settle the mayor's race and some city council races. So my hope is, as a longtime resident of Sacramento, that anger won't be the deciding factor in those races, but they very well could be.
Well, let's talk about that a bit, because I think you're onto something. It is almost as if we are at a moment where you are being forced to choose a side.
Yeah.
If you are a resident in this region, and there is no more polite kind of pushing the peas around the plate and making kind of like very generalized statements. It's almost as if we're not quite there, but almost like we're going to have a litmus test on, are you with the tin hose of the world, and homelessness is an issue that has to be dealt with, and not necessarily dealt with in kind of a polite, progressive sort of way, which has dominated Sacramento's landscape for probably the past 25 years or so. But then on the other side, you've got people who say, we need to double down on more of a social services and more progressive approach toward dealing with homelessness and the related housing types of issues. How do you think that this does factor in to the local political races that we're going to witness?
So my concern is that our region, our city, are going to make choices at the ballot box based on emotion and based on false choices. For example, what I hear from my neighbors, from people around town, from elected officials, is that we need to do more. We're not at this point right now because we haven't done anything. Millions and millions of dollars have been spent on this issue. I would argue we're at this point because we haven't done enough. But right now, the way the issue is being framed is that the solution that's being offered is no solution at all. It's just more enforcement on the social cost of homelessness and never getting to the underlying issues, which is a lack of housing capacity and a lack of drug and mental health treatment.
Let's go there then on that, because I hear from similar sets of people, and one of the questions that, or one of the statements that comes up increasingly now is, we don't think it can be fixed, but you know, I just don't want it where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk to a store owner who comes to their shop every day and has to clean up human waste in their doorway, or who has been broken into multiple times and their insurance is going up and they're being threatened with not being able to get insurance, they're just fed up and they don't want to hear about it anymore, about, you know, the ecosystem of the complexity of the issue. They just want something done. And that's the reason that actions like Tin Hoes, who I believe in your paper recently, Edwin Cheminsky, mm-hmm. Very esteemed and respected law professor, said what Ho is suing on is, one, unenforceable, but second, he doesn't even have standing, in his opinion, Cheminsky's opinion, to even bring the suit. But people are some people are applauding that because they just want somebody to take a stand. How do you respond to that?
Well, I certainly understand the frustration that people feel. And listen, I work in Midtown. It's all around me. It's right outside my window. When I walk to lunch, I have to step over it, step around it. I understand all those things. I've lived in the city for 30 years at this point, and I have a front row seat for how we got here. But ultimately, the anger that's driving public opinion doesn't have an answer either, except to move people around. And so if that's where we land as a community, we're still going to be, you know, you and I can check in a year from today and people will still be dissatisfied, because simply moving people around or in some cases arresting people isn't going to get us to where we want to go either.
Okay, but let's go all the way there. Is there a possibility that this is just a hopeless situation and it's a fact of life? And so therefore, you know, hey, residents, just deal with it. Never going away, never getting better. Move on to other priorities.
So I would put the onus on the residents themselves, Scott, because the issue of, for example, of having homeless encampments, which was a very unpopular idea in Sacramento a dozen years ago, and when I was the columnist for the Bee, I was very anti that idea. Now we reached a point where people uniformly support it because things have just gotten so bad. But the reason that we don't have more encampments in the city or the county is precisely because everywhere you try to put one, people oppose it. So if you get 100% opposition anywhere you go, well, what's the answer to that? So I would put it back on the public. Okay, you're frustrated because there aren't enough places to put these folks, and it's still a legal issue that hasn't been decided, but the courts say that you have to have a place to put them, to move them, but you can't move them someplace because everybody opposes where they can be moved.
I will tell you, and this is impolitic to say, but I've heard more occasions than I would have expected. People said, hey, you know, if they can't get it together, take the money and pull a Greg Abbott and put them all on buses and send them somewhere else. And I mean, it's interesting that Sacramentans, who have tended to be very sort of compassionate and welcoming as a people, as a community, this consistent hardening doesn't look like it's abating at all. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. Let's turn, though, to someone who's been very involved in that issue, who's coming to the end of his time. Daryl Steinberg, Sacramento's mayor, who made conquering this issue a key plank in his platform. He's going to be moving off the stage, at least in Sacramento as the mayor, in the coming months. What is it that you think will be written about his tenure and the fact that he may have been very earnest and committed in addressing this issue, but it, generally the feeling is that homelessness is as bad as it ever was?
Well, I am in the camp where I believe that once Mayor Steinberg is gone and some time elapses, I think that he will be viewed favorably for being the one person in this region who consistently tried to take this issue on. And to me, the big riddle of this, and again, I put this back on the public. The public and the business community, led by the business community, by mutual friends of ours who are very smart people, have gotten so sideways on this issue that there are some folks who are should be smarter than this, who actually believe that this homeless issue in Sacramento is Daryl Steinberg's fault. And anyone who believes that is either lying or is a moron. Look around the West Coast. Look around the world. Have you been to the Bay Area lately? I mean, you could make an argument that some of these cities are worse off than Sacramento. And so—
I gotta interject though. Look at the Bay Area, except in San Francisco, except when President Xi comes to town, except in downtown San Francisco. Let me tell you, I was there during that time. You could have eaten breakfast off those streets. They were so clean at that time. And so cynics say it's not that the problem can't be addressed, it's that the politicians have no will to address it.
Well, and so, but the one guy who has had the will has been Daryl Steinberg. And so instead of punishing the do-nothings, the Phil Cernas, the Patrick Kennedys, most of the members of the Sacramento Board of Supervisors, they punished the one guy who has tried to do something. Why did Daryl Steinberg get sideways with the supervisors? Because they felt like he was moving too fast and too strong on this issue, and they got their little feelings hurt.
Which brings to mind the old adage that no good deed goes unpunished.
No good deed goes unpunished. No good deed. So we're punishing the one guy who has tried to take this on, and we're letting the people who have sat to one side, and we're not punishing them. And it's just an interesting dynamic. I can't speak for other communities, but that's the way it's been in our community.
So with all that being said, we have a contested mayor's race coming up. How do you handicap the players and where they stand?
Well, so there are four primary candidates. Assemblyman Kevin McCarty, former city councilman Steve Hansen, former state senator Richard Pan, and Flojan Kofer, who's an epidemiologist and someone very known to you and also an advocate in town. And so in Hansen and Pan, you have the establishment candidates, although the establishment endorsements have been going to Hansen. In McCarty, you have a legislator who's sort of on the progressive side, but not as progressive as Flojan Kofer. And so I don't know if anybody expects that this issue, that this race will be settled in March, that it'll probably go to November. Two people will emerge. And so the question is, which two? And I know all four, and I know you try to get me to predict things in January, and you've been doing that for years now. I hesitate to predict because I haven't seen any reliable polling on this to see how people are feeling. But I would say do not sleep on Flojan Kofer. She has raised a lot of money, and she has a lot of support.
Well, let me give you something to react to. When I look at Hansen and I look at Pan, I see two very skilled politicians who are in sort of the Obama-esque technocrat sort of mold, where it is that they understand the levers of government, they know how to move them, they are looking for pragmatic solutions that they think will kind of bridge the center. When I look at McCarthy and I look at Kofor, I see two progressives, one in the vintage of being very, very pro-labor and very much in sort of the mainstream of the progressive left of the Democratic Party. And then in Kofor, Kofor represents kind of a sort of element that you say is kind of an X factor, because Kofor will state that she represents the people who do not speak, but who live within the community, who the political consultants completely write off because they're not considered to be dependable voters, but she calls them the silent majority. And she believes that she can mobilize them, but her platform flies in the face of all of the conventional wisdom solutions. And the question is that, like Trump, only an opposite in 2016, does Florjan Kofor represent a movement that the smart people don't even know exists?
Well, the city has elected a young progressive before, but for a city council race in a district, the citywide, I would argue that we've never really elected a true progressive. Now, Daryl Steinberg will say he is, and particularly the young folks will vehemently disagree with him. But we tend to be citywide a very, and we have been anyway, a very centrist, sensible, kind of technocratic, business friendly, even though the business folks would disagree with that, city. And so Florjan Kofor would be the first Black woman ever elected if she were elected mayor. But she's also the youngest of the four running. And she's definitely on the political spectrum is to the left of anyone who's ever been elected to the mayor of Sacramento before.
It's quite true. And a related issue with her is, and she has been, she's well known for bringing up this issue, is her platform really goes after some of the sacred cows on how the city and frankly the region have been run. For instance, she attacks the police and fire budget and considers the focus on law enforcement to be one that is overzealous and doesn't deal with the root issues of the reason that there is so much crime. What's interesting about her stand on that is that she is doing that at a time when crime and law and order are on the ascendancy post George Floyd. And she's really out there all by herself on that one. And it'll be interesting as to whether or not that stand pays off or whether it ends up working to the benefit of her opponents.
Yes. And the voters will decide it.
Let's go to the state though. We're facing a $68 billion budget deficit. Gavin Newsom has cleaned himself up in order to prepare himself either for 2028 or to step in should, you know, lightning strike and Joe Biden decide to step backwards for running for re-election. How do you think he gets out of this jam?
Yeah, it's going to be tough for the governor because he rode into office just with South California had a ton of money. He may have had the easiest path to the governorship of anyone who's ever run for California, because he was lucky enough to get a Republican challenger for the general, which means that he didn't even have to name that Republican, and he didn't. But the all the economic forecasts show deficits for the remainder of his time. And he very well could own the lack of housing in California and the homelessness issue before he's done. All of that may fall at his feet before he's done.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, because there are some who say that he was elected, to use a baseball analogy, on third base and walked home.
Yes.
Because of
he was born on largesse.
Because of the largesse that Jerry Brown left him. And now all of a sudden it looks like his entire team has fallen apart, at least with regards to this budget. How does this affect Sacramento? Because this is still a government town, and those cuts, you can't slide that one around the plate and essentially make it go away.
I'm actually very worried about our city. And there's a, you know, you asked me at the top of the show if there's an issue that deserves more attention. I know of one that I didn't think of earlier. Roughly 40 to 50% of the buildings downtown are owned by one government or another. So there's no taxes coming into the city based on those properties. And before COVID, those buildings were full. So there were customers and they were spending money downtown. Well, guess what? Most of them are gone, and it doesn't appear that they're coming back. And so to me, if Gavin Newsom cares about his legacy, at least cares about his legacy as it relates to the city where he will work for 8 years as governor, that he will do something to alleviate an issue that is choking the number one revenue generator for the city, which is downtown Sacramento. And that issue, there's an issue that deserves attention going forward.
Some might cynically believe that he'd be more concerned about that very same issue in downtown D.C.,
sure,
where he looks to go, than in downtown Sacramento, Marcos.
But the other question there is if a candidate like Gavin Newsom can play outside of California. I'm not entirely convinced that the answer is yes.
Let me ask you this. When you look forward, who are the emerging voices that you think we're going to hear more from that maybe we haven't heard from in the past?
You know, I think it's time for a generational change in Sacramento. I think we're seeing that. I think even if, say, an establishment candidate like Steve Hansen or Kevin McCarty, if they win for the mayor, for example, they're going to be of a different generation. Steinberg's generation has been in power in Sacramento for 30 plus years. So that's about to change. And even though you might have a candidate in Sacramento who has been on the council before, who's been in the legislature, it's still a younger generation, a different generation. And I think that we're poised to see that. We're seeing new leaders emerge in some of the different business groups. You know, I certainly would keep an eye on Luke Wood, the new president at Sacramento State. I think that, you know, he's in his early 40s as well. And I think that we're seeing, and I'm a person now in his early 60s, and I'm no longer connected to the generation that's ascending anymore. And it's just a reality. And my friend, I would put you in that camp as well. So I think that we're going to see that. I think there's a whole cadre of people in business, in politics, in academia, in their mid-30s to late 40s, who are going to take over Sacramento and are in the process of doing so.
Well, in talking about generational change in our final moments, recently you had a little hiccup in terms of social media. You published who you were going to vote for on the Baseball Hall of Fame ballot. And just in a few seconds, tell us what you learned from the experience of basically being swarmed in the social media environment.
I didn't learn anything about Twitter that I didn't already know. I broke all the rules. I struck back at people who struck at me. I wouldn't back down. I doubled down. And I ended up getting pilloried for days on end. And I was just reminded that social media profits from divisions. And if it's just in the context of baseball, who cares? Where it's dangerous is in politics. And it's something that we have to be really aware of this year, that we don't allow fake news and fake divisions to influence us. And it's just something that we need to be aware of.
And I think we'll leave it there. That's good advice. Thank you, Marcos, for sharing. And we'll look to see how it all works out this year.
Thank you.
All right. And that's our show. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for watching Studio Sacramento. I'm Scott Syphax. See you next time right here on KVIE.
Thank you for listening to Studio Sacramento from KVIE Public Television. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes to help others find it.
All episodes of Studio Sacramento, along with other KVIE programs, are available to watch online at kvie.org/video.